So our passage today is Micah 4. Our passage divides into three sections. One, the fog of war. Two, O little town of Bethlehem. And three, the shepherd king. So those are the three things I want to cover today. Let me begin by reminding you that Micah of Moresheth is prophesying in the 8th century BC. So although his prophecy is all about Jesus, it's at least 700 years before Jesus appears and is born in Bethlehem, which we're going to celebrate at Christmas, of course, and also on the 9th of December at our most excellent Christmas carols event here at Barney's. So pray that it won't be a rainy Saturday evening and plan to be there with friends, all of that. But look, that's not important right now. Let's move on. What's important is the passage in front of us. So usually on a Wednesday or Thursday, I get a message from Elaine, who helps out with admin and prints out rosters and all sorts of very helpful things. And she says, can you confirm your passage and what is the title of your sermon? So this week I said the title of the sermon is O Little Town of Bethlehem, which is a beautiful and calm Christmas carol. And the reason for that title is Micah 5, verse 2. But you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler of Israel, whose origins are from of old, from ancient times. And that, of course, is fulfilled in Jesus, who we remember at Christmas time and actually every day of the year. As we dig deeper into Micah, and as I read and reread the prophecy myself several times this week, I thought, actually, as beautiful and as calm as the little town of Bethlehem might be, where our Lord Jesus was born, a better sermon title might be The Fog of War, because war is exactly what's going on at the time that Micah is writing. Micah is in the south kingdom of Israel, and then you have the north kingdom, and you know that kingdom ceases to exist because it's overrun by the Assyrian Empire. Now, for us, 2,700 years later, we go, okay, that's all good, I get it. I'm going to file that away in the memory bank fairly neatly. 722 BC, the year in which the north kingdom of Israel ceased to exist, smashed to pieces by Assyria. But if you and I had actually been there with Micah, there was nothing neat about it. People died, children died, families died. What about the South Kingdom, where Micah was based? Well, let's imagine a kingdom from the north today coming and sweeping into Sydney and destroying the North Shore. Right. What do you think? Do you think they would stop neatly at the Sydney Harbour Bridge and the Parramatta River and say, okay, we've done the north, that's it? Why would they not cross over and attempt to take the Sutherland Shire as well? And in fact, you know, there's no way they wouldn't. They just keep coming. And in fact, the Assyrian army did exactly that. They kept coming and pretty much overran the south as well. So go forward about 20 years from the destruction of the North Kingdom, and we actually have, in the words of Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, we've got them recorded for us. He trapped King Hezekiah in Jerusalem like a bird in a cage. And when you think about that, trapped him like a bird in a cage, you think, okay, that's good news and that's bad news. Right? So the bad news is if you're in Jerusalem and you're looking out, well, you're trapped like a bird in a cage. And you look out and you see the army of the Assyrians, or the armies of the Assyrians, as far as the eye can see. So that's bad news. But the good news is you're still alive and you're looking out at the armies of the Assyrians. And you can read that for yourself in 2 Timothy. That's New Testament. 2 Kings, you can read the story of the armies of the Assyrians and how if you're in the South Kingdom, you live. And the Assyrians retreat. It's going to be another 130 years before Jerusalem is smashed by the next empire, which is the Babylonians. And, oh, well, by then you're dead, your children probably your grandchildren are long gone, so in one sense you go, okay, who cares? But that's what happened. And so that's the fog of war. Like, there's enemies everywhere. The land has been overrun. It is bad news. And that's what Micah is describing at the end of chapter 4. Let me read a few verses, 4 verse 9 to 11. Why do you now cry aloud? Have you no king? Has your ruler perished that pain seizes you like that of a woman in labour? Writhe in agony, O daughter Zion. For now you must leave the city to camp in the open field. You will go to Babylon. There you'll be rescued. There the Lord will redeem you out of the hands of your enemies. But now many nations are gathered against you. They say, let her be defiled. Let us gloat over Zion. There you go. That's the fog of war right there. And so the comparison is that Jerusalem is like a woman in labour. There's terrible pain, writhes in agony, says Micah. And then the image just shifts a little bit. It's like a woman surrounded by attackers who are just waiting to see her exposed and defiled. It's not a pretty picture. And the gang of nations have gathered to attack. What will happen to Jerusalem, surrounded by so many haters? And, would you believe it? A happy ending. So, reading from 4 verse 12 to 13, but they do not know. they do not know the thoughts of the Lord. They do not understand his plan, that he has gathered them like sheaves to the threshing floor. Rise and thresh, daughter Zion, for I will give you horns of iron. I will give you hooves of bronze, and you will break to pieces many nations. You will devote their ill-gotten gains to the Lord, their wealth to the Lord of all the earth. Not bad, is it? the poor girl under attack turns out to be Wonder Woman. And the nations attacking are trampled as if by bronze. Wouldn't that be great if all attackers of women were trampled in the same way? But let's also be clear, as Micah is clear, this is not actually like you or I, or, you know, being the hero here, as like some martial arts movie, you know, you take down the big gang of bullies by yourself. Who is responsible for this defeat of the nations? The one responsible, and indeed the one who plans the whole thing out, is God himself. Out of the fog of war and cruelty and everything else that goes along with that, there's only one fighter who comes out as the winner, and that's God himself. A short term, as 5 verse 1 says, they will strike Israel's ruler on the cheek with a rod. Long term, God emerges as the winner. Winner takes all, and that's what's going on. That's point one, the fog of war from which God emerges. And at this point, I'm just going to hold back from any silly applications about who are your enemies. Are you surrounded by awkward people? Is your marriage difficult? Is your mortgage too big? You know, there's lots of problems, and God's going to stand up and fight on your behalf. That is not what's going on here. But what is going on is that no matter what is going on in our life or in our world, there's only one true king, and that's God himself. So, point one, the fog of war, God emerges victorious. Point two, O little town of Bethlehem. Have a look at Micah 5, verse 2, if you got it there. But you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, you are small among the clans of Judah. Out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from of old, from ancient times. Therefore, Israel will be abandoned until the time when she who is in labour bears a son, and the rest of his brothers return to join the Israelites. He will stand and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God. And they will live securely, for then his greatness will reach to the ends of the earth. And he will be our peace when the Assyrians invade our lands and march through our fortresses. Bethlehem is today, and was back then as well, a little town, right? O little town of Bethlehem, like the song says. So maybe if you're trying to imagine it, don't think of Sydney and just to the south of it is Wollongong. Maybe think Sydney and then heading towards Wollongong by the coast road. So think Helensburg or Coaldale or Austenmere or Thirroul, just a little place. And if you haven't heard about it, oh, well, don't worry. No one else has either. And the knowledge isn't going to change your life either way, right? Except, out of you will come one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from of old, from ancient times. So how about that? Bethlehem, which is actually the town where King David was born, will once again be the place where a great king is going to be born. Once in royal David's city, which is what Bethlehem is, the city of David, stood a lowly cattle shed where a mother laid her baby in a manger for his bed. Mary was that mother mild, Jesus Christ, her little child. He came down to earth from heaven, who is God and Lord of all, and his shelter was a stable, and his cradle was a stall, with the poor and mean and lowly lived on earth, our Saviour holy. There you go. Point one, the fog of war. Point two, a little town of Bethlehem, the place where rescue is going to come from. Point three is the Shepherd King. So let's pick it up again from Micah 5 verse lock. In the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, and they will live securely, for then his greatness will reach to the ends of the earth, and he will be our peace when the Assyrians invade our land. We will raise against them seven shepherds, even eight commanders, who will rule the land of Assyria, the land of Nimrod, with drawn sword. He will deliver us from the Assyrians and march across our borders. I don't know what comes to your mind when you hear this word shepherd, because that's what the passage is talking about. The shepherd's going to be raised up. I actually don't know if I've ever met a shepherd. I've met farmers. They are smart, intelligent, practical people, lots of skills. They work full time. They're never really off duty. But when I think shepherd, I think, nursery rhymes, kids' Bible story books. Little Bo Peep has lost her sheep and doesn't know where to find them. Red sky at night, shepherd's delight. Red sky in the morning, shepherd's warning, etc. All of which is to say, I've got no idea. I've met sheep. I've never consciously met a shepherd. So as with everything, back to the Bible. What's the Bible mean when it talks about shepherds? Who are the shepherds in the Bible? Well, there was Jacob in the book of Genesis. He did shepherd work, mainly involving goats. So I guess he was a goat herd. Amos was a shepherd of Tekoa. He's one of the prophets. The most famous shepherd of all was, in the Old Testament, King David. So before he was a king, before he was anything, he was a shepherd. What did his work involve, apart from hanging out with the sheep, you know, in the heat of the day or the snows of winter? Well, and you can read it for yourself. Have a look in 1 Samuel. If a lion or bear turns up and takes a lamb, your job is to get your slingshot or whatever, and then it's kill or be killed. Assuming you're not killed, you rescue the lamb. So you get the picture. The shepherd is a bit like a security guard, except young. And if they went for a career change, they'd be straight into the SAS or some commando group. You know, do you think you could kill a trained fighter who was over 9 feet tall? Well, if his name was Goliath and your name was David, yeah, you could. So David was the greatest ever shepherd of Israel. That's who he was. Now, here in Micah 5, him defeats many enemies. Indeed, verse 5 says he defeats the Assyrians. And not only that, there are seven shepherds, even eight commanders. Seven is the number of perfection in the Bible. Can you do better than that? Well, eight commanders, and they will smash Assyria. I don't think we're now talking about history, actually. We've gone beyond that. The Assyrian Empire declined, and then the Babylonian empire came up after that. So I don't think it's about history, but this is really now talking about the work of God. He is absolutely in charge of any empire, no matter how powerful. God is in charge. He's unstoppable. Do you think he can stop God? And as Micah says here, you might as well try to stop the dew from landing in the morning. You might as well try to stop the rain from falling as try and stop God. You might as well get in the way of a young and hungry lion as much as try to stop God, which mauls and mangles as it goes amongst the sheep. That's what Micah uses here in his description. And this great God, who is at the same time like rain from heaven, like a lion in the forest, like a shepherd among his people, he is the Lord who will come and be our great shepherd. He's not a safe shepherd. At the end of Micah 5, the judgment and destruction he brings is not just for the guys in the black hats, the bad guys. He will judge our idols as well. Listen, just reading the last verses of our passage from verse 10, I will destroy your horses from among you and demolish your chariots. I will destroy the cities of your land and tear down all your strongholds. I will destroy your witchcraft. You will no longer cast spells. I will destroy your idols and your sacred stones from among you. You will no longer bow down to the work of your hands. I will uproot from among you your Asherah poles. When I demolish your cities, I will take vengeance in anger and wrath on the nations that have not obeyed me. He's a good shepherd, but he's a dangerous shepherd if you get on his wrong side. And I hope you can see where we're heading with this now. Who is your shepherd? Listen to Psalm 23, a psalm of David. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. God is our shepherd, you see? And when we reach the New Testament, which king, born in David's city of Bethlehem, now claims to be our shepherd? Well, look, you know that any question I ask from the front, the answer is always Jesus, God, or the Bible, right? So let me finish by comforting and challenging you with these great words that Jesus speaks about himself. I'm reading from John 10 and beginning at verse 1. Very truly, I tell you, Pharisees, anyone who does not enter the sheepfold by the gate but climbs in by some other way is a thief and a robber. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him. The sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Jesus used this figure of speech, but the Pharisees did not understand what he was telling them. Therefore, Jesus said, very truly I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep have not listened to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life, and life to the full. I am the good shepherd, says Jesus. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. I am the good shepherd, Jesus says. I know my sheep and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheepfold. I think he's talking about us. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there will be one flock and one shepherd. And that's what Micah has promised to us today. Amen.